You're listening to the Cannabis Investing Network. Before we begin, a short disclaimer. The full disclaimer follows at the end of this episode. This podcast is a general communication and is being provided for entertainment and information purposes only. It is educational in nature and is not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose. Please enjoy responsibly.
Hey everyone, Manish here. Before we start this episode, I just want to give you a heads up that something funny happened with regards to the audio on this episode, and it's you'll see. I just wanted to let you know that we tried to fix it in editing, but we just don't know how. So rather than delete the whole episode, we just thought we would post it. And you guys can just enjoy it for what it is. And thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Network podcast. My name is Manish. And today in studio, we have the one and only the lawyer representing the Teflon Don, helping fight these election outcomes. His name is Abby.
What's going on, man? Yeah, JD MBA right here in the house.
You don't need a law degree to represent Donald Trump. Come on.
Ah, of course. Of course. Of course not.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
No complaints. No complaints. It's, we're in the middle of earnings season for cannabis companies. Since we did our episode last week, GTI reported and the results were absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Huge revenue beat, huge EBITDA beat, just positivity all around. By the time this comes out tomorrow, Cresco will have reported, and I'm guessing you're going to see more of the same from Cresco. I think you'll see huge revenue beat and probably improved EBITDA for Cresco.
Right.
Today, Trulieve and Curaleaf reported.
Right.
And
strong numbers from both.
Yeah, I mean, we'll haven't had really time to digest those, but I'll say that what was impressive to me is Trulieve managed to maintain a 50% EBITDA margin, despite the fact that there's continued price compression in Florida.
Right.
And that just, I think, again, points to the impressiveness and the quality of Kim Rivers as a operator and,
right,
and her team. But today is not really about any of that. That's actually, we're going to cover it next week,
okay,
on a special episode with a special guest. So
okay,
stay tuned. But the episode today is, I think, a narrative that has been dominating the markets and the news is the news of the Pfizer and as well as the Moderna vaccine.
Okay.
And, today I want to revisit the idea of the, the COVID investing network that, for a couple of weeks that was, really
all we were talking about. Yeah.
All anyone was talking about.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And part of, what we like to do here is sort of provide an alternative viewpoint on things. So
right,
when people were really negative on cannabis stocks,
mm-hmm,
we come and say, guys, it's not all bad, right? There's a lot of good here.
Right.
When people are too optimistic, we try to do the opposite is say, hey, look, there are risk factors here to
right,
keep in mind, right? So today we want to revisit this idea of, okay, well, where are we with COVID?
Mm-hmm.
What is ahead in the future? What are different possibilities we have to think about and how to navigate this as investors, right? Why is this important to think about? And then, the so what factor, how does it affect cannabis,
mm-hmm,
at the end of the day?
Okay.
Right? So first of all, in terms of kind of going forward, a lot of optimism right now, right? The vaccine has brought with it basically good news all around.
Right.
Right. So people are which, by the way, is phenomenal, right? It is great to see, great to hear. There's very clearly a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
and,
true.
And yeah, that makes me feel good. That makes you feel good. It should make everybody feel good.
Right.
But let's just think about, the other side of the coin. What are some things that really we don't have clarity on? So first of all, When will we actually get the vaccine? I mean, this is interim data.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much uncertainty surrounding the vaccine right now. We've been given clarity of the fact that, you know, two major pharmaceutical companies have proven something that's more than 90% effective. We haven't talked about logistics of how distribution is going to occur. We haven't talked about who's going to get what, right? It's not going to be like every country is not going to get the same amount.
Great right? point.
So you've also got to take population into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this in the past. I guess logistics, again, it goes back down to that aspect. And then on top of that, who's going to be from a general population perspective, who's going to be comfortable to be the first batch of people to take it?
Right. Will people even want to take it?
Right. Exactly.
There's a whole slew of people who even pre-COVID were anti-vaccine, right? Anti-vaxxers. Right.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of different dynamics here mm-hmm. that have to be figured out, mm-hmm. right? And even if we just assume a kind of a best case, a very rosy scenario, you're probably talking about something like next spring to next summer.
Before, like 2021?
Yeah, 2021, but okay. But best case, right?
Yeah.
By the time you actually get it distributed, by the time, you know, people actually get the vaccine and some semblance of normal life can return.
Well, so I saw, this is just a quick headline that I was skimming over. Mm-hmm. It was on through CNBC, and they were saying there was a company that was stating that winter 2021, so mm-hmm. roughly exactly a year from now.
Yeah, sure.
That's when they expect life to start going back to normal. Not going back to normal, but that's when actual normality will begin to resume mm-hmm. after they factored in the distribution issues as well as who's going to take it and whether or not the population is going to be – if it actually works, right? I think spring is just mm-hmm. too optimistic personally.
I what I'm saying is if we think best case scenario,
right.
Spring, summer, so I'm talking like May, June – I think we'll start to be an inflection point.
Okay.
Like to me, that's optimistic, but that is the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
So you make a good point. I mean, timelines can always, like even the data we're looking at from these companies, it's interim data. This is not a finalized, you know, phase three trial yet, mm-hmm. right? But why to me it's so important to talk about this is, and by the way, I kind of disagree because I think there's a seasonality to this. Like, I think when you see these cases going out of control now, people didn't suddenly get way more reckless over the last couple of weeks. I think the cold weather has a serious impact.
Well, for sure, because high UV light kills bacteria, right?
UV light helps. Yeah. You know, when the weather is warm, people go outside more, and you can do a lot of things outdoors.
I think heat kills viruses. There's certain
viruses. Yeah. It absolutely does. And even there's a bit of a sliding scale where, you know, when you look at places, you know, like Florida, for example, right, mm-hmm. where people, you know, seem to be less cautious, right, than other places, it seems to be doing not as badly, right? And so the theory I've had is, while the fact that they're more spread out, the fact that you have more sunshine, more warmth, that seems to be helping.
Right.
Right. Whereas places like New York or Toronto, they're denser and they're also colder.
Right.
Right. So, you know, less sunshine. So people spend more time indoors. People get, you know, sick more easily. So that's why I'm saying I think regardless of where we are, I think by the time we get to next summer, we will see the virus abate. Right. And I think that's part of what happened this year. You know, the numbers, when you look at June, July, August, they really fell off.
Well, you also have to remember June, July, like maybe not July, August, but June, we mm-hmm. were coming off a very strict lockdown.
Agreed. Absolutely. The lockdown worked. But part of what happened, I think, this is just a theory that I have, is that, and remember, in June 7th, I think, was the protest, maybe June 2nd or something, right? When all the protests sprung up and people were outdoors and the numbers went up, but not too bad. They weren't like, you know, we were like, oh man, this could really be.
But testing was also getting ramped up at the time, right?
That's true.
You've got to look
That's
at
true.
The not the actual positive cases. You've got to look at the percentage who got tested
exactly.
versus the positive cases that
exactly.
were
exactly. So
there.
If 50,000 people got tested,
right?
What percentage were positive?
Right.
Right. You're absolutely right. And a really positive thing is, if you remember back in March, we said, look, you can't trust the numbers. Because we just don't know because there's not
still today
testing.
You can't really test the number or trust the number. You have more clarity in the numbers.
Totally. No, I think they're like when you're testing, you know, like take Ontario for example, you're testing 30,000 people a day.
Right.
And something like 1,500 are coming back positive. That's about 0.5%.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a good, pretty good negativity rate, if you will, right? Over 99%,
exactly.
Right?
It's a phenomenal negativity
rate. Right. And if you go back to March, we were testing, like, even less than 10,000 a day because we just didn't have the capacity.
Right.
So that's the positive. Like, the testing is better. The capacity is better.
Right.
All of that is really, really good. My theory is that as we get into the warmer months, you know, it will help a lot.
Oh, for sure.
And so the vaccine, if we can get it out fast enough, plus the warm weather, that is very positive.
Right.
So what that means is that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
There definitely is. And that light at the end of the tunnel has reinvigorated optimism into the market.
Right. But this is the funny part, because the market had already baked in a ton of positivity.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, I mean, look, you can always make, by definition, everything is reflected in the price, right? But if it's a perfect market, that's kind of like how it works.
That's efficient market
theory.
That's
a perfect efficient market theory. Yeah, everything's baked in the market.
Which I wholly disagree with.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. Or sorry, I'm not a big fan of that theory myself either.
And sorry, just to bring it back to cannabis, one of the things to keep in mind, guys, is that the more efficient, so the bigger and more widely known a name is, like an S&P 500 name, is more likely to be a more efficient.
Yeah.
You know, the price is more likely to be efficient and take into account a lot of the forward looking.
And if you
things.
Want to, yeah, exactly. And if you want to take that even one step further, then that means fundamental and technical analysis are just basically irrelevant because everything is reflected in the price.
Yeah. And not everything, but it's more efficient, right? A lot of, there's high liquidity, a lot of eyeballs on it, a lot of deep knowledge.
No, I mean
it.
Like, sorry, I don't mean like an S&P 500 name. I mean like in a purely efficient,
if it's
100%
truly, yeah, yeah, sure.
Efficient market.
That's perfect knowledge,
right?
Of the stock,
I mean,
basically.
Everyone
right?
gets all the everyone knows all the price
totally.
Reflects all information. There's totally. No insider trading, none of that stuff.
There's almost no uncertainty,
right?
Right? That's kind of, and obviously it's just theoretical.
Yeah.
But the flip side is if you look at cannabis trading on the CSE, trading on the OTC, being federally illegal, if we're talking about the US now, high inefficiency. Right. So that is the positive in terms of a lot of things are not factored into the price.
Yeah. Well, that's
positive
why you
negative.
And I have been able to be as successful as we possibly have been in there is because
you've been successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Believe it or
not.
Can
you show me how?
Believe it or not. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But I don't know. But like that's when actually doing research pays off.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. That's why I love this industry as an investor. It's like you can really have an edge. If you're willing to spend the time and energy, there is a real knowledge gap, right? And you can really have an edge over the person who just sees the ticker on CNBC and goes out and buys it.
Yeah, or even, I mean, CNBC is very recent.
Before that, it was
you see the ticker on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. No, right? that's a phenomenal point. Yeah, you see it on, you know, whatever, some random message board, right?
Yeah.
And somebody says, this is the one you need to buy, and you know, people
and you click that person's account. That account was created yesterday. Has one post.
Yeah, well, I mean,
all about
the person's
like,
one for one.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Batting 1,000.
Exactly. But no, sorry, so going back to the whole efficiency, or not the efficiency thing, going
optimism.
Back to the optimism.
Yeah, is there a lot of, how much
market?
Optimism is baked in?
Yeah, so I mean, like, look, I don't think... there was a lot of uncertainty with the election happening. You know, prior to the election, I said that regardless of which party wins, the results were going to get contested. It seems that like Trump is refusing to concede. He's still pushing for it. If it wasn't for, so that was an all-time negative sentiment. If it wasn't for that positive sentiment of Pfizer's vaccine coming out the day after Trump, or sorry, not coming out, but like the news line, the headline that read 90% success rate for Pfizer, if that didn't come out the day after Biden became president, then I don't think we would have seen the rally that we're seeing right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like that definitely, definitely helped spur optimism. No,
right.
No question.
Exactly. And then we had Moderna come out and say they got 94.5%. So even their vaccine's even more efficient, right? And the market went back up again. So like, you know, when maybe J&J will come out and say, hey, we're 99% or whatever. Like they haven't, but I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's the 90 versus 95. I think it's just the fact that
more and more companies.
If you have two vaccines, you know, hey, like it's more likely that at least one will work, right?
Yeah, if you have two vaccines, I would say it's more likely that there's probably 10 or 15 other vaccines out there.
Yeah, yeah,
right? There's probably tons of other, all these other researchers are coming out to put it out there. So I think that's going to go up.
Do you think that'll be a flex going forward? Like, oh, you got the Pfizer, I got the, I'm rocking Moderna, bro. Like, catch up.
I mean, I think you'd be the only person to flex that. Like,
I can't hang out with you 90%ers, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Jeez, yeah.
Come catch me in the top 5%.
Yeah. J&J only for the boys. That's it, right? Or Pfizer only for the boys. But no, so I think that there's the optimism is it's getting there, but there's still a lot of uncertainty.
Right, but sorry, are you saying right now when you look at the market, you feel that there's a lot of uncertainty baked into the prices?
I mean, when I look into the...
we're talking general, broad markets. We're not talking specifically about cannabis.
Yeah. When I look at the broader markets, I mean, I have no idea what's going on. Like, there's just... It's so absurd. Like, yesterday, after markets closed, Tesla made it in the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
Stocks on fire, obviously, rightfully so. Mm-hmm.
12 or 13% bump, which equates to about $50 billion US of market cap.
Yeah.
Right? We don't have a cannabis company that has $50 billion.
Yeah, that Tesla made in one day by getting into the S&P 500. And I jokingly made that joke to you privately where I was saying that this is the blue chip equivalent of NASDAQ listing for cannabis companies. Right?
Yeah, we always talk about that is a catalyst. Getting your cannabis company on the NASDAQ is a huge catalyst.
And the next catalyst is getting your cannabis company in the S&P 500.
Exactly. Yeah. This is like the
first trillionaire will be created then. Mm-hmm. Promise you that. Hopefully it's one of us or one of our listeners. If so, make sure you show us some love, all right?
Once you start spelling million with a T, look us up.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Whew. I think that right now there's a lot of uncertainty. When I look at the markets right now, I can't really make sense of it. It really does seem, you said this a while ago, it seems like the blue chip market or the broader markets are trading like how penny stock markets trade. That thesis has continued on till now. Mm-hmm. You're seeing press releases come out or headlines come out. Things are going on fire. They're skyrocketing. There's really no rhyme or reason. Value investors have actually been hurt in the last little bit. Growth investors have been doing a lot better than value investors have. Tech names have been killing it. Like, I don't know. You look at basically what's going on, and you try to make sense of it. I can't see anything that points to, okay, the vaccine is the reason that the markets are rallying, or okay, a Democratic win is the reason that the markets are rallying. There's nothing that you can really point to that's showing everything. I know CNBC is stating that the vaccine is helping, and yeah, it definitely is helping, but I think there's other factors too, right? Like, for example, you just talked about Tesla making the S&P 500. That obviously contributes to the S&P 500 going up, as well as the broader markets, however you want to look at not necessarily the Dow Jones because it's not on the Dow Jones, but
so I guess what you're saying is a lot of volatility out there, which, you know, sometimes you can point to a reason. Like, I do think the vaccine had a clear impact, and you see that a lot in the stocks that were kind of the hardest hit.
But the vaccine did have a clear impact, and then there was a couple days where there was a correction, and then the next vaccine news came out, and it bumped back up. So this is going to pull back, and the next one's going to...
there's no clear rhyme or reason, kind of.
Right. It's not like... Fair enough.
Okay. Fair enough. But what I'm getting at is that something I said a while ago, you know, I think still holds true today, which is it feels to me like risk remains mispriced. So... I'm surprised by how much risk people are willing to take. It feels like, you know, the behavior that was, you know, common in 2019 and maybe the beginning of 2020 has resumed. People really have not learned anything or really have not changed their behavior much.
Well, why would they? They've been
living
rewarded.
Through the pandemic. There you go. Now that's right. So that's a great point to focus in on. And I said this to you as we were coming in, like, if you're a trader, and you are, let's take the most extreme example. You're a Dave Portnoy trader, okay? And you opened a trading account for the first time mid-pandemic. First of all, congratulations to you.
Okay. Dave Portnoy trader, you got to...
Yeah, so Dave Portnoy trader. So if you open an account for the first time, you know, you know nothing but a market on the upswing, right? You have done exceptionally well because the tide has just lifted you up. And if you think about it, that's what the Fed was trying to accomplish. They were trying to push the market up and burn all the shorts. And more than even just the shorts, the people like me who were you know, holding on to their cash for dear life, they were trying to make us feel stupid. And they, mission accomplished, right? Because eventually the human spirits, the animal spirits kick in, and it people hate watching other people make money while they sit on the sidelines.
Right.
So, you know, the market has gone up, up, up for liquidity and technical reasons. Probably some fundamental reasons too, right?
Right.
Things were trading just too low. But now it feels to me like risk is mispriced, and bringing it all back to, you know, our listeners and us, we really have to think about the risk of correction or what could happen between here and, you know, the getting back to normal life,
mm-hmm.
right? I think there's a tremendous risk of a default. You know, people who, you know, a lot of companies and people just have debt that has been pushed off or deferred.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous risk of repricing of certain assets, and tremendous risk of change, right? So a live example I can give you is that, you know, in commercial real estate, downtown office towers were, you know, really the hottest, one of the hottest asset classes over the last couple of years, because there was a migration over the last few years into the core.
Right.
Everyone's moving out of the suburbs into the core. It is clear to me that office life will change going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Once we have a vaccine, yes, things will start to kind of change, but maybe go back to normal. But it's a bit of a fantasy to think we're going back to 2019.
We're never going to go back.
Or we're never
2018.
Going back.
Like, yeah, sure. That's good.
The world has changed fundamentally.
Well, I mean, a lot. Yes, exactly. The world has changed fundamentally. Like, there are businesses now that didn't realize that they could all work remotely. Companies
sure.
spent an insane amount updating or upgrading their IT infrastructure to accommodate for work from home
mm-hmm.
and whatnot. And, you know, when people do come back in the office, I think it's going to be more flex hours.
Totally.
That ends up happening. And
totally.
I don't, they can remember, even prior to all this, we were flirting with the concept of having a 4-day work week, right? That's very plausible now.
Not me. I have a 3-day work week, so.
Oh, you work? I didn't even know that at all. Wow. Jeez. But no, so I mean, that's very plausible now, right? You might not be in the office 5 days a week.
100%.
Right?
By the way, just as a side, I think that is the future. I think the future is the flexible work week. Where
see, and I don't like that personally, because right. I'm somebody, like, you know, I've been on the street forever, and I've always come into the office. And even during the pandemic, I mean, obviously not during the lockdown, but like
mm-hmm.
when things have opened up, I've been socially distanced and coming back to the office because mm-hmm. I'm more productive here.
Totally.
I mean, I don't wear a suit anymore, but like
mm-hmm.
when you, to me, there's something about putting on a suit going into the office. It puts you in the right headspace. It's like, you know,
you're right. I agree with you totally. And I think there's something lost when people just sit at home.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like I equate it to, like, you know, if you're a football player, you're lacing up your skates. You're lacing up your cleats and getting out on
sure.
the field, and it puts you
there's
in that
energy
mindset.
To it. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. So I agree with you. But the point I'm getting to is, so when people say the office is dead, I disagree, because there's a human element to it.
Mm-hmm.
When people say the office is 100% fine, right? Rents aren't going to change. Pricing's not going to change. Demand's not going to change. I also disagree, right? There's some change that's going to happen. I don't know what the price of said change is. And yet, when you look at office real estate in general, there is no serious price correction on office real estate.
Okay.
Now, part of that is just because in commercial real estate, things take time,
mm-hmm.
right? People are very slow to change things, especially on the downside. On the upside is a different story. But on the downside, people are not going to let their assets go at a huge discount because they'd just rather wait it out.
Right.
Okay. But so as investors, there's two things we need to think about. One is that from here to, let's say, next summer,
right,
we are going to go through a very dark winter. I think this will be a real tough, tough time for a lot of people. I think it could get a little scary, right? I think you're going to see COVID cases get really scary. I think you're going to, you know, have this, you're probably going to have some bumps in the road with regards to a vaccine. Let's not forget, in the U.S., there's still no second fiscal stimulus. Right? Remember, that was supposed to, that was priced into the stocks in June. I remember when the stocks were going up and the rationale was this is because the second stimulus bill is going to pass. Mm-hmm. And that never got corrected for. Still hasn't got corrected for. We're like 6 months later here, and we're lucky if we're going to see a stimulus in Q1.
I think we'll see a stimulus in Q1. I think when there's a clear, defined president after mm-hmm. inauguration, I think we'll see. There might be a lot more clarity on that. And again, sure. I mean, this is just speculation.
No, I agree with you, but you know,
this has nothing to do with my legal work on the Trump campaign.
since we're on the topic, a fun little story is I was reading this news story about one of their legal cases in Pennsylvania. I think it's Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, Trump's been saying, oh, we didn't have observers. They went to a back room and they wouldn't let our observers yeah. in, and, which, by the way, is completely not true.
Because you're there.
Yeah, obviously.
No, he wasn't.
I locked the door. So, and, you know, so they make all these wild claims, but when they actually go in front of the judge, the lawyer cannot lie. They can't just lie or they'll get disbarred.
Perjured. Yeah, you can't perjure yourself. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So they go in and then the judge says to the lawyer, you know, finally the moment of truth, he goes, were your observers allowed in the room? And the lawyer goes, there was a non-zero number of observers in the room.
Okay, great. There was a non-zero number of observers in the room.
I just Excellent. Think that is that's like, if that's not used in boardrooms around the world.
I've never, I got it. You got to send me this afterwards. That's
yeah,
hilarious.
Totally,
that's
totally.
It's so good.
It's a good one. And then he goes, so yes or no? And he goes, yes, they were allowed in the room. I just think that's great. Non-zero. Yeah,
there's non-zero
Non-zero
observers.
Amount. Yeah. So the point though being that like this, I mean, maybe in a normal year, the lack of transition would be kind of funny, right? It would be kind of like, okay, this person is just, you know, not giving up. It's almost like comical. But in a year where this crazy pandemic is happening and it's ramping out of control, you know, this is not a joke. Like, this is actually hurting people and we're going to pay the price for this. Right.
So, sorry, what, like
the lack of transition between administrations?
Oh, okay.
Because you need to coordinate your response to the pandemic.
Right, yeah.
Right. And this administration doesn't really have a response. Right. Like
the current, like the
current administration.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
So you need to hand it off to the, you know, which you're supposed to do, period.
Yeah.
Like this is not normal. You know, the Obama administration did not put up roadblocks for Trump. I mean,
well, the Bush administration didn't do that.
Exactly. Obama, this is not right? normal behavior,
no.
right? And in a normal year, it would be annoying, maybe a little funny. This year, it's a big deal.
Right.
So there are opportunities for this to play out in the market mm-hmm. where, you know, the COVID is spiking out of control. Maybe we have some road bumps in terms of the vaccine and how quickly we can get it out. And the big one is I think people are going to start to realize, like, the vaccine is great, but it's not – it doesn't mean everything. It's not a reset button.
Right.
There's a lot of damage that we have to clean up that I think will take us years to clean up. Like,
right.
I really think this could be the lost decade of productivity and will kill off a lot of businesses, a lot of jobs, which may never come back.
Right.
Right. So the point of all this being, as an investor, this really weighs heavy on my mind about, you know, I have this extraordinary bullishness on cannabis and U.S. cannabis especially, mm-hmm. but
the overall economy is,
I mean, the worst that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
I mean, I don't know. 2008 was pretty bad. This is terrible. Don't get me wrong. But mm-hmm. we also have, again, basically universal basic income right now. In Canada, at least. I don't think mm-hmm. in the States they do, but like in Canada we do. Mm-hmm. So,
but so that so therein begs the question, right? Once, like, let's say we fast forward now to next summer, mm-hmm. everyone has the vaccine. Not true,
right? Right.
Like,
yeah,
let's
yeah.
just
this
say
is a hypothetical.
Yeah,
situation.
Hypothetical best case scenario. Everybody has a vaccine. Okay, we're not that worried about COVID anymore. Can we pull all the government support now?
No, absolutely not.
Right?
We can't, because there's so many businesses that have. Like you said, there's jobs, there's businesses, there's mm-hmm. industries that just won't come back.
Right.
There's tons that won't come back. And so It's funny because, you know, we started this podcast saying, like, when are we going to go back to normal? It's like, well, there is no, we're never going back to normal. We're going to a new world that's going to emerge from this. And it's not just a Canada-America thing. It's a global thing.
Yes.
Right? Like, think of, like, World War II, you know? You never went back to pre-World War II world. You,
different world.
A different world. Yeah. You modernized. You had assembly lines that were a lot more modern. You had manufacturing. Totally. It's the Industrial Revolution. Now we've got, you know, technology has skyrocketed for us. Like, it accelerated in terms of what we can do, right? Like, I remember for like Peloton, for example. Like, I don't know anybody who'd have ever bought that prior to the pandemic.
Sure.
Now, everybody owns it. Is everybody going to keep it? I don't know.
Hard to say, right?
Right.
Right. So this is something I think, you know, we talk a lot, and we've talked a lot recently about the idea of, as an investor, you need to keep multiple realities in your head, right? You need to think about what could happen, not what, you know, not only the thing that you think is going to happen, but the different possibilities of what also could happen, especially if it has, you know, an extreme outcome. And I think there still is a lot of possibility for negative extreme outcome. The good news is, I'm confident that, you know, we will put the worst behind us. The bad news is, I think things are still a little too optimistic. So now,
without a stimulus, I agree with you. With a stimulus, different story.
Look, I think we'll get a stimulus, no doubt. Stimulus will help. But one of the things I'm realizing, and we've talked about, is there's a lot of times not an easy answer. So when I say, hey, are we just going to take the stimulus away next summer? It's a really tough answer. Because the reality is, as you said, a lot of people need help. A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of businesses are in trouble. But so what do we do, though? Do we just give them stimulus forever? Can we afford to do that? You know, if businesses are already going to go and jobs are going to go, do we just rip the Band-Aid off and then try to retrain those people? Right? Or do we just try to, you know, like, what do we do? There's not an easy answer here. It's really, really tough. Similarly, I'll give you another one. In Ontario, the numbers are spiking. It's not that bad, but, you know, definitely going the wrong direction.
It's pretty bad. It's like 1,500. It's like the highest we've ever had.
Sure, but back when we didn't have testing.
Yeah.
Right? Because everyone's like, now, wow, look, our numbers are even higher than they were in March. But I'm like, we didn't have testing in March.
Right.
So, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I say now at least the numbers seem very reliable.
Right.
So the point being, though, I just read an article that a bunch of health experts are advocating for a total shutdown to get to something they call COVID zero. The idea being, shut everything down for, you know, 6-8 weeks. Let's get to zero on the COVID scale, and then we can open up again. Look, you know, I'm the guy who's, you know, screaming from the rooftops about, you know, the dangers of COVID, right?
Yeah. You were wearing a mask and you were social distancing, so it's a little bit muffled. They didn't hear you.
I was gargling hand sanitizer at the time, but
actually, you know what? Just jokingly aside, there was something about people drinking. Listerine? Yeah, no, people were drinking hand sanitizer, and like they're ending up in the hospital because I don't know if you guys noticed, like hand sanitizer now smells like tequila, and a lot of people were drinking it, and it's just like, what are you doing? And it's like, if you can survive that, trust me, you beat COVID.
You're good.
You beat, yeah, you're good. You don't need no vaccine. You don't need anything. Just go back to the world.
We need to study your blood and make
exactly.
a vaccine.
Exactly. It's like, anyways, it's look it up. It's crazy. There's people ending up in the emergency in ICU. Because
that'd be wild if they found the cure for COVID was eating a Tide Pod.
Oh, God.
So, I forget what we're talking about now.
Well, we were talking about the vaccine, the numbers going up.
Right. So COVID zero, this idea of, hey, shut it down, get to zero, open it back up again. It's a crazy, crazy goal because, yes, I do agree. Like, hey, we need to get the numbers down. But the price of a lockdown is so high. To shut down the entire economy, you are basically sentencing a lot of these businesses to death. A lot of these small businesses, and I know because I'm in real estate, I see them. They're struggling.
Even right now, without a total lockdown, look, a total lockdown could actually save some of these small businesses as opposed to what's going on right now.
Really?
Okay, well, what's going on right now is the businesses are open.
Okay.
They have low foot traffic. They have lower sales. They have to keep one or two or three maybe sales staff on. A certain percentage of their sales staff has to be on. So their costs are going, they still have operating costs. And it's difficult. Like I've talked to a couple. Like
they're like treading water, just trying to get to.
Yeah, I was talking to a small gym owner, and I was asking her and she's very well accomplished. She's she's a lawyer previously, and then she started her own gym. And I was talking to her and I said, "Hey, what's better for you guys?" And she's like, "You know what, Abby? We've made the decision to just completely shut down for the remainder of the year, irrespective of what the government says. We're not opening up." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Why not?" She's like, "We just can't do it. We can't keep calling
it's
our staff
worth
back.
It.
We can't pay the hydro. We can't do all this. We can't because it takes money to turn the machine back on."
Got it. Yep.
Right. So for her, she's like, "You know what? If they could just say, hey, look, everyone has to stay shut down till April. We're going to defer rent, all that stuff." She's like, "I would rather much have that, a clear message, than have this quasi lockdown." And you know who actually said this? Bill Ackman. Bill Ackman, Pershing Capital, on CNBC, came on, had his little heartfelt thing, made a couple billion, walked away. But he had a very, very, very good point, and that capitalism will not survive with this quasi-18-month lockdown, and this is what's happening right now.
Yes, but I want to have a big asterisk. That was the time, that was mid-March when he said that, and at that time, a lockdown was the right answer.
Right.
We didn't have testing capacity. We didn't know what we were dealing with. We didn't understand it. You know, we didn't even know about masks, right? Now it's a different world, and you know he was right because the U.S. didn't lock down, and so they're they're dealing with this this quote unquote second wave, which is a continuation of the first wave, right? You can see it, very different approaches here in Ontario and Canada. We locked down, we locked the entire country down, and our case count went to almost zero,
right?
Like it doesn't go to zero because that's not how it works, but it got real, real low. And that's why today we're talking about, 1,500 is so high. Look at some of the states, right? You add a zero to that for some of these places, right?
Right.
So that's why. But the point I'm getting to, and this is, we're demonstrating this right now, you know, with this discussion we're having, there's no easy answers.
No, there definitely isn't an easy answer. But like, if I was a small business owner, I would say, just give me a clear answer. If you want me to shut down, I can shut down. You know, then I can catch up on whatever, redo some stuff. I can bring my staff back when I need to, as opposed to if you're a restaurant owner right now, think about it. Typically, you know, if you had 100 tables, you probably only have 20 tables that you can possibly seat now, but you still have the overhead.
Well, right now in Ontario, you can seat zero.
No, you can have patios are closed now?
Patios are open, but it's 0 degrees today. You know, it's freezing today. So
No. So as long as the outside is now considered inside,
covered or whatever.
You can,
okay, fair enough.
A canopy over.
Got it. Okay.
And put heaters in. So, so that's another added cost that wouldn't have been there last year, right? So they
added cost to make less money.
Exactly, and it's
you're treading water.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. So what? Okay. So what for cannabis? First of all, cannabis is not immune to any of this. Cannabis has proven itself to be a consumer staple. Cannabis is actually COVID friendly. You know, a socially distanced world is actually fantastic for consumption of cannabis. And cannabis consumption has gone up. Acceleration of legalization has improved with, you know, the current issues with COVID, right? The need for tax dollars, jobs, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. All of that is positive. And if we go into another lockdown, or if we have continued, you know, as we deal with continued COVID issues, cannabis will actually benefit, I believe. But if people have issues in terms of dollars in their hand,
right?
Which so far they haven't really, right? It's the stimulus has helped keep people flush,
right?
I don't know. Again, I don't know. Like, I'm just worried that ticket sizes people write might come down if they don't have money.
Okay.
People going into the store to buy cannabis, you know, they might want to spend $200, but they might only be able to spend $100.
Right.
So far, that hasn't happened. So far, ticket sizes have gone up during COVID.
Right. Well, it's because, you know, they've got an extra, most people have an extra $2,000.
And nowhere to spend it.
Right.
Right?
I shouldn't say an extra $2,000. They're getting $2,000, even though they're employed, unemployed. They still have the $2,000. It's not like everybody's getting $2,000. If somebody's listening, they're like, "Oh, I should move to Canada, get $2,000 for free." It's like, no. Instead of if you're unemployed, you'll get it.
But in the U.S., the benefits they were getting were above and beyond. Like, some people were making more money.
Yeah, that's here too. Yeah.
You know. Same thing. But the point I'm getting to is, you know, and I've talked to dispensary owners or retail operators who said, in the beginning of the pandemic, our sales fell off a cliff. Mm-hmm. People didn't have the money and people were scared to come into the stores. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as soon as the stimulus checks got into people's hands, that money, some of that money went into cannabis.
Right.
They said, like, it's not, it was black and white for us. People got the money. They started coming to the stores.
Right.
So what happens if people stop getting money? Right? Can we see the sales certainly decelerate, but can we see them go the other way? I think they'll be sticky. I'm not trying to say you're going to see a huge drop off of cannabis sales.
Right.
It's just something to be aware of.
But I also don't think you're going to see a huge drop off of stimulus, right? So in America, sorry, in Canada, I don't think it's going to go from 2,000 to zero. I think it's going to go 2,000, maybe 1,500.
Get weaned down a little
1,500
bit. 1,500
to sure. 1,000, 1,000 to 500, then 500 to zero, right?
But that could affect the sales.
Right.
Right? Like that's the point I'm making here.
But
right?
I mean, I would assume that as it starts, they would base that weaning down of the stimulus check
on how much you buy
on
how much weed you buy.
No, on unemployment going down, right? So as more people get employed, then they can say, okay, like, you know, we can bring it down 25% because unemployment went down 25%, right?
Yeah, I don't know. This is a very real risk factor to me. But a more immediate, so that's a fundamental, right? That's a business fundamental. A more immediate risk factor, just as an investor, is the stocks. Like, so I'm looking at the landscape of the stock market.
Yeah.
You know, what are the odds that there is some level of correction? I'm not saying market meltdown. I'm not saying you're going to have what you saw in March where, you know, there's a panic and a dumping. But certainly, you know, you can see some panic. You could see the idea of some sell-off. Like, we have not had a real... Like, I think in the last, you know, since the original, you know, crash in March, I think we've maybe seen two really bad sell-offs. Like, one was that 7% day. I think it was June, like mid-June or something.
Yeah, and then they put in...
The Fed came in and said, whoa, we were doing X, Y, Z. Yeah. So that was the worst day we've seen.
Right.
We saw a little mini one since then, but that's it. So I want to just make crystal clear to everybody... A lot of the people, the traders, a lot of the retail, which is a lot of our space, especially in the US, a lot of those people, when things start going south, they will drop these stocks like they're hot. They don't know what they're holding. All it takes is a little bit of bad news, a little bit of panic, a little bit of risk off for people to start dumping, and you'll see some real volatility. You could see some real wild swings.
What would you do in that situation?
Yeah, so why does that matter? Why does it matter today?
Mm-hmm.
Because I am so incredibly bullish. I'm like, man, I got to get all my nickels and dimes together and put them in the market. You know, I moved from 100% cash to maybe, I don't know where I am now, maybe 80% cash, okay? Sorry, from 100% cash to 80% invested.
Mm-hmm.
So I flipped completely, right? So I built it out over time. Now I'm sitting on 20% cash and I'm like trying not to...
Right.
You know, put the last 20% in.
So if anybody was looking for a buy signal, there it was.
There it
or
is.
Or sell signal, sorry.
Sell it all.
Yeah. Nisha's into the chat. No, sell.
Wait till I get to 85. Then you really go crazy. but that is it. Basically, just try to give yourself some level of patience. Try to build your dry powder and have some cash reserves so that if things go south, which I think there's, you know, this period, I don't know if it's 6 months or 8 months, where things can really hit the bricks a little bit, you need to have some dry powder to be able to deploy.
For sure. I'm going to take the other side of the coin.
Sure.
You should always have cash, right? Like your portfolio shouldn't be 100% invested. There's always going to be opportunities that pop up somewhere. Okay. I'm basing a lot of my investment decisions with the utmost confidence that the Fed's going to step in if anything does occur. So like, let's say if we wake up, I still think that from now till the end of December, I don't think we're going to see a stimulus. The market's doing just perfectly fine. You know, Johnson & Johnson's probably going to come out and say they have a COVID cure, and then every other pharmaceutical company is going to come out and say that as
sure.
well. When you get into like next year, where I think the stimulus is going to start coming in, I think like if the market does start to correct, I think when the stimulus has come back in, it'll just bounce right back up.
Well, so there's when we say stimulus, right? There's Fed. There's the Fed.
Sorry, yeah, Fed. I meant the Fed.
Right. So I agree with you, and that's why I'm saying, even though I'm like, hey, I don't like the way risk is being looked at today. I think people are taking a little too much risk and not pricing it appropriately. I agree with you. Like, if you have another, you know, June 7th minus 7% day, I don't know what date is in June, but you know, what if you have a minus 7% day, the Fed will do something. Because what that signaled to me on that day is they said to me, the risk of contagion is too high. We can't have people being really scared and dumping everything and moving to cash. We cannot allow it.
And so I've told you my theory about this in private, and you know, I'll share it now. And I really like, you know, the US dollar used to be backed by gold originally, but now I think it's backed by the stock market, right? The stock market is sort of the beacon of why you should hold US dollars. So the Fed's, people who are listening might be like, well, what's the Fed's incentive to prop the market up, right? They don't hold the market. They don't own stocks and bonds. I think it's because the dollar, the US dollar itself, is based off of the stock market, right? Like if you hold the US dollar, you're like, okay, this is a strong economy, because a lot of people assume the economy with the stock market. And I think that's why the Fed kind of steps in to keep it propped up. And I've used that thesis even back in March, and I put money into work back then. I put money into work in June. I mean, I sold in August. I sold in August for personal reasons. And I've been slowly buying back in. And you know, I'm gonna continue to buy back in, because I really think that people who've taken risk have been rewarded, insanely so. As opposed to people who are risk averse and did everything right,
they've gotten burnt.
They've gotten burnt, right?
Absolutely.
So
that was the goal of the Fed, to encourage people to get back to normal risk taking behavior,
right?
Whether or not it made sense, right? That's what they were trying to do, and they accomplished it,
right?
So I agree with you. If we have a negative 7% day, there's more ammo for them to fire, and don't fight the Fed. They have unlimited ammo, essentially.
Right.
However, you know, if we have a minus 1% day, you know, if we have a minus 1% week, a few weeks in a row,
right,
and the market goes down 7 to 10 points, do they step in at that point? Probably not, right? Like I don't think they really fire their bullet unless there's panic.
Right.
A little bit of a cool off, to me, you don't waste your bullets on that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, why does it matter for cannabis? Because these stocks, especially in the US, like, these are penny stocks. Even if they don't, you know, even if they're not pennies, the holders of these things and what moves them, it's not institutional. It's starting to be a little more that way, but it's not institutional. So the retail investor can really drive this thing up or down.
Right.
And so far it's been up.
Right. But you're saying the sentiment on the retail side can switch quite quickly.
It can switch overnight.
And it would
switch overnight.
People would start panicking.
Absolutely. And you're seeing this a little bit with, you know, look, like, we're in earnings season right now. So to me, this is the most bullish time for cannabis. The next earning reports will not be until mid-March and maybe April, because they have to do the full year audit. Right. So right now we're mid-November. We're 6 weeks after quarter end. Quarter end September 30th, 6 weeks after. It'll be at least another month for the audit.
Right.
Right. So that would put you to mid-March. Right. So it could be even later. So I think you're going to see results between mid-March and mid-April next year.
Yeah.
So from here to mid-March, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Right. We got December. We got January. We got February. It's at least 3 months.
Right.
And 3 months in this reality of the dark winter that we're going into, right? So again, just think about the different realities. I can really see a reality where the market cools off, rightfully so. It's not that it goes crazy down.
Right.
It just cools off a little bit. And if the market goes down 2 or 3 points in a week, cannabis could go down 10.
Right.
Right? So you when you look at it from that lens, there's... You know, the Fed is not going to step in because cannabis stocks are going down 20%.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not how it works, right?
No.
So
I wish that's how it works.
It would be very nice, yeah. But that's not reality. And I always say, don't fight reality.
Right.
So definitely have some dry powder, because right now there is a zero premium on cash. Nobody cares about cash.
Right.
Cash is trash. But when things get bad, cash looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And you're going to want to have enough cash that you can deploy, buy more at prices that you like.
Well, no, that makes sense. I mean, you should always have cash. Okay. Mm-hmm. You should never, I always have a certain percent of my portfolio in cash. There's, mm-hmm. it should always be like that. And I don't like dipping below more than 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most I've ever had invested is 95%. So, cause.
To me, when I have 5% cash, to me, the problem is if things really go south, I'm not going to be able to stomach spending that 5%. You know what I mean? I'm going to say, no, I need this 5% just in case. Right?
Just in case for what?
I don't know.
Things go south.
Like the thing is what, you know, it goes back to this earlier point. There's no easy answers.
Right.
If cannabis stocks go down 10%, do you spend all your money?
No, probably not. Right? For me, whenever I buy stuff, I take whatever I'm going to put in the market and I mm-hmm. just buy half. I'm okay. I'm perfect. Like, you know.
Sure. So then you're down to 2.5% cash.
I mean, that's if I were to deploy my whole half my cash position right. in this one opportunity.
Right. Again, what I'm getting at is we never know where the bottom is. We never know where the top is.
For sure.
Right? So if things go down 10% tomorrow, for the most part, I'm probably not a buyer of every name. Maybe there's, you know, pockets of value where I jump in, right?
Right.
But what I'm saying is if things go down 10%, maybe I want to nibble. What if they go down another 10%?
Right.
Right? I got to be able to nibble some more. But if you don't have enough cash, then by the time they go down, or if they go down 30, 40%,
right.
you're tapped.
Right.
And you're like, shoot, I don't have enough cash. Right? And if life shuts down and there's some stimulus, but, you know, again, if cash becomes valuable again, you don't want to be stuck not holding any.
Right. It's true.
That's the dance here.
Right.
So all I wanted to do this week is revisit COVID, talk about, you know, where we are today and look forward and say, very happy to have this vaccine news, but look at the risks, look at the negative possibilities, not just, you know, not just the winter, but going forward even beyond that.
Right.
And try to have cash and try to spread that cash out.
For sure.
I'm only going to spend this much money for the rest of the year. And then the rest I'm going to spend, you know, for Q1, I have a budget.
Yeah.
This is how much I'm allowed to invest.
Yeah. I mean, that takes a lot of discipline. As we're doing this episode, I'm just sort of thinking in my head, this is probably the best earnings season cannabis has ever had.
Ever.
In the history.
Ever.
And here we are talking about uncertainties.
And discipline.
And taking risks off the table. Guys are probably just like, what is wrong with these guys?
I'm nervous. I'm like, these earnings are too good.
These earnings are too good.
Get out now.
Yeah, exactly. So like, look, listen, you guys have probably been invested in these names for quite some time. There's been some run-up. Don't be afraid to take profits, right? You're investors, not operators. Mm-hmm. Perfectly fine to take profit.
Well, and that's, you know, I remember somebody asked us some questions about, you know, don't sell the winners. And it was a great question. And we had a great chat about it. And in the message he sent back, and he said, hey, thanks for the discussion. He said, I started investing in these names only in April.
Oh, he's loving life.
I was like, oh, my sweet summer child. Yeah. You've never experienced, you know, the true pain.
Yeah, right? Don't sell winners, obviously, bro. All your whole portfolio is a winner.
But, and so to wrap up this episode, I just want to talk about kind of a couple of earnings reports, just high level. You know, look, to give him some credit, though, Village Farms. Village Farms, I've mentioned, it was a name I really liked. I like what they were doing. You know, that was a name I bought a bunch. You know, I sold it at a loss. I took a beating on it. I look at it today. It's back to where I sold. It's back to where I originally bought it.
Right.
So if I had been patient, I could have made back on that name because it's a quality name. It's a quality company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's easy to see that reality and say, oh, I should have held it. They had to do a lot of things right to get there, including being able to buy out their, you know, their portion of Pure Sun Farms, which was a huge win.
Yeah.
Massive win. Right. And a lot of the run you're seeing too is probably short covering.
Right.
Right. But it's just an interesting, I'm like, oh, I could have made my money back on that one. That's an interesting one to look at.
Makes sense.
Right. By the way, on Village Farms, I was talking to Hedge Fund Steve about it today and I just said, look, just be careful. Half of their revenue is wholesale. And B2B in Canada
is awful.
Oh, it's a tough business because it's very lumpy.
Mm-hmm.
You get it one quarter and it's gone another quarter,
mm-hmm.
which brings us to MediPharm Labs.
Yeah.
MediPharm Labs had, I think, the worst earnings report I've ever seen it have.
Yeah.
I think the first earnings report it had in Q1 of 19 was $10 million top line.
Yeah, and this was,
and this was 4. Five. 9. Not yeah, not even five yeah. million. I mean, and you know, it goes back to what we say. The CFO left a week before earnings for family reasons.
Yeah.
We've seen that movie before.
We have, yeah.
Right? I mean, again, brutal. And last episode we talked about Labs versus Valence. And I said, look, I like both, but Labs is a longer term play because they don't control the supply chain.
Right.
They are an input provider. They're selling B2B wholesale bulk oil. Yeah, they've got vape pens they sell and they've got their own brand now, but those are small part of their business.
Right.
That you're seeing the problem with the B2B in Canada.
Gotcha.
Right? They're getting killed this quarter.
Well, I mean, like, look, Labs has some other issues. Like, I've been a big proponent for them. I've been a big fan of them. They've made us both a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about our concerns for them. One of the things that Labs is having an issue with, you know, is they didn't pivot their business model. They didn't expand. They're doing CO2 extraction, which is supposed to be the best extraction, but it's hard to scale on. They're trying to scale, so there's so much with them. It's the one company that I really wanted to do well, but unfortunately.
And even now, it's down to 50 cents. You know, I bought a bunch at a buck. It's hard to pull the trigger and buy more because you don't know where the bottom is. Now, if it gets 50 to 50 cents, I'll probably buy a little.
They have a lot of cash, though, still on the balance.
They have a lot of cash. They burned a lot of cash this quarter, too, so that's tough. They're still waiting on that EU GMP. Everything's delayed because of, you know, inspectors not able to come over, so that's a challenge. Again, all of this is really, really tricky. Canada is good at making investors look dumb. Canadian cannabis, that is. So even for me, I'm like, hey, 50 cents is kind of attractive, but I'm like, or I could put that dollar into the U.S.
Yeah.
Where I feel like, you know, I'm more likely to get a hit and more, you know, less likely to lose.
Right.
So that's a really tough balance.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, again, if you give it a year, like when you talk about Labs, you can't talk about months. I think this is a year's story. So that's a stock if you're going to buy. I mean, unless you're buying it for just the trade, but you give it 2 or 3 years and see where the company goes. But that's why it's hard for me to own a big position of this company today. And that's why I own more Valence. The Valence story for Rec is a lot like quicker payoff.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I think you, and so that's why I go back to Village Farms. I really like what they're doing. The brand is out there. They're winning the low cost, you know, value game.
Yeah.
Love that they bought the whole thing. But that B2B business, be careful. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple quarters you see a real bad down quarter because of wholesale.
Right.
Last thing, this is coming out, this episode's coming out tomorrow. Cresco Labs is reporting tomorrow morning. I think you're going to see a huge revenue beat and a big improvement on EBITDA. Really, it's driven by Illinois and Pennsylvania. You know, cultivation coming online in those two key states.
Mm-hmm.
They've got huge wholesale in those states. I know I just said B2B can be lumpy, but, you know, when the market is so supply constrained,
right,
that product's going to get eaten up in a second. And it goes to the episode we're going to do next week about the earnings. You have to start thinking about these companies as what their assets are state by state.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to break down, okay, it's not just that Cresco beats, why did it beat?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, get more granular.
You have to.
Like, look at it like your portfolio, right? Your portfolio could be up, and you could be like, well, why is it up? It's like, oh, well, it's up because Trulieve is doing good. Well, where's Laggard? Oh,
right.
It's Labs.
Right, it's, right. Or even like broader, like, oh, I own, I'm up 20%, but it's because I have a lot of Tesla, and Tesla's flying.
Right.
Like, stuff like that, I think, is key to understanding, right? So that's something we'll dive into next week.
Sounds good.
CINpodcast@gmail.com. Guys, be prepared for all eventualities. Keep some dry powder. Until next time.
This podcast is a general communication and entertainment being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purposes. Any examples used in this podcast are generic, hypothetical, and for entertainment purposes only. None of Cannabis Investing Network or its affiliates are suggesting that the listener or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all. Communications such as this are not impartial and are provided in connection with advertising and marketing of products and services. Prior to making any investment or financial decisions, an investor should seek individualized advice from a personal financial, legal, tax, and other professional advisor that take into account all of the particular facts and circumstances for an investor's own situation. By listening to this communication, you agree with the intended purpose described earlier. Opinions and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.